In today's weather, it's currently about 59 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe and thank you for listening.
Go, Mary, in the bag and tied around my neck for my protection. I'm walking around, big old sack on my back, coming in your direction. What kind of tea do you like? I got it. I'm the medicine man, herb from the land. I'm the herb man, come see me. Oh, I'm the herb man, you all come see me. Hey, rosemary, calm your nerves, got peppermint leaf to get rid of my fever. I keep periwinkle to get some love now. Whoa, I got hug me clothes to make my backbone strong. Gold, cola, tonic for my blood, dandelion for my bones, y'all. I can leave. Keep away flies. Hot lady cayenne for my pressure. Oh, I'm the herb man. Come see me. Oh, I'm the herb man. You all come see me. Get the children out the way now. No, you can't smoke this, sir. This is for salad. Yes, salad. Herb man, herb, herb man, herb man.
This broadcast has been pre-recorded. There will be no call-ins.
Herb man, hot cayenne, hot lady cayenne, for my blood pressure, passion flower, lady lavender, on my pillow make me sleep good at night, and golden seal, chamomile, nutmeg, make your breath smell sweet, cassava, for your snake bites, uh-huh.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Theodore Watkins, and welcome to another program of To Your Health. You know, we are, we have with us our trusty assistant, Frank Smith, and we're happy to have him with us. And we're going to ask him to introduce our guest today, who is a prominent psychiatrist, did internal medicine before he went into psychiatry, so he's a very able physician. And this month is Mental Health Awareness Month, and so we thought we would talk a little bit about mental health. So Frank, tell us a little bit about our guest today.
Dr. Marcellus Cephas. He is a psychiatrist, and as you mentioned, he's a specialist in internal medicine as well. He's in Glen Burnie, Maryland, and he's got extensive experience in psychotic disorders, neurodevelopmental disorders, and addiction and substance abuse. He teaches psychiatry and gerontology at Howard Medical School. He's affiliated with the Adventist Healthcare System and the Rome, he's director of Rome Healthcare Systems. I present to you Dr. Marcellus Cephas.
Dr. Cephas, so happy to have you.
Thank you. So I did not study internal medicine. I did occupational medicine prior to that. And I teach the psychiatric residents at Howard University in geriatrics at Shady Grove Adventist Behavioral Healthcare System.
All right. We got all that straight now.
Yes.
Let's roll. Let's roll. So, you know, I want to get off to a big start by saying, you know, it seems that many patients don't seek medical care for mental issues because they don't want to be labeled as being crazy or out of their mind. Do you still see this as being, at least this is what I saw growing up and early in my training and in practice. Is this a correct observation, and is it still something that you find prominent?
Well, believe it or not, in the 21st century, you would think that we would get past some of the difficulties we have with stigmatism of mental health. But it's still an ongoing issue. It's still a barrier to getting appropriate mental health. It's still a barrier for referrals or people to seek out mental health, even though 40 to 50% of what happens in the primary care setting has to deal with behavioral health or mental health. People are just very reluctant. And there's a myth that goes about saying that I have to be strong. I have to can just shake this off and be mentally tough and do what I need to do. But we're seeing that myth is causing a lot of detriment and causing a lot of damage, not only to our young people, but also to our advanced age or elderly also.
You know, you're so right. I probably need a degree in psychology or psychiatry to mm-hmm. be an effective, even in holistic medicine.
Yes.
I talk to all of my patients, and I've especially zeroed in on cancer patients, and I tell them, matter of fact, I don't tell them, I ask them, what was significant? What significant stress were you dealing with 2 years prior to the onset of your cancer?
Right.
I've mm-hmm. only found one person with cancer that wasn't under significant stress for at least 2 years prior to the onset of the cancer. Right. Mm-hmm. So this whole thing of mental, emotional, is very, very significant. So I'm throwing out terms, phrases. But we need,
right.
if possible, if we could get some clarity, you know, we say a person is out of their mind. So what is the mind?
Well, it depends on who you literally ask. But the mind and the consciousness is what separates us from, as you may say, animals. It is the ability that God has given us to discern, to process information, and to do something about the information that we have. We still don't understand how emotions come about. Can you imagine hearing music? It goes through the temporal lobe to the frontal cortex and causes a response that makes your eyes water. We don't understand what that is. There's no direct connection between the temporal lobe and the tear ducts, but it happens. So the mind is based in a chemical process. There are what we call neurotransmitters that, when propagated, they actually will continue thought processes, habits, awareness, and it's all based on a chemical basis. It's all based on how we were created. I believe in creation, so I'm just letting you know
all right,
how we were created that this thing, the mind, is a complex organism. In fact, you know, it runs every system. I don't know anybody that is able to have proper health without having a healthy mind. And you mentioned about your cancer patients. Just a little caveat. There was a little girl in Loma Linda University whose father was an immunologist. The little girl went to her father one day at breakfast and said to her father, "Daddy, I have warts." And so he was reading the paper and he says, "Okay, hon, well, just tell your warts 3 times a day. Go away, I don't want you. Go away, I don't want you." She came back within a month and said, "Daddy, my warts are gone." That is how a big process of studying immunology at Loma Linda came about. And the connection between your mental health and your physical health, because, you know, he was just telling his daughter, "Okay, you know what? I'm trying to read the paper.
Go away. You know,
go away." In a sense. So when we look at mental health and we look at the connection that we have with physical health, we see that you cannot be healthy unless you have some things that have transpired in the mind first. And hopefully we'll get into some of those things so you can have what we consider to be healthy living.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not just, I just mentioned cancer, but I could have mentioned heart disease, I could have mentioned diabetes,
yes.
I could have mentioned hypertension, I could mention ulcers of the stomach. I mean, you just name it, and there is a relationship there. So,
yes.
You know, as we look at this thing, what really do we know? You mentioned part of it,
and
it's very, very important. I remember a lady came to me and she was severely depressed. It was my first year in practice. You know, I had done my residency and I left surgery, gone into holistic medicine. And this lady comes and she's severely depressed. And she was depressed because she and her husband were separated,
mm-hmm.
but they were living in the same house and the brother was dating. And so she was out of her mind.
Yep.
I gave her high potency B complex and L-tryptophan.
Okay.
L-tryptophan, as you know,
yep.
goes to L-serotonin, which goes to L-dopamine, which is that one of those neurotransmitters that
correct.
And I did it because I noted that in treating people with manic depression, we use L-dopamine. So mm-hmm. At least we used to. I'm not sure what we do now. We used to. So anyway, she was a very famous Black children's story writer. She drove home. We were in Upper Marlboro. She was Marlboro Pike. She was what we used to call the Gold Coast, Upper 16th Street Northwest.
And
it took an hour for her to get home. When she got home, Doc, she called me up, and she was irate. "Doctor, you trying to trick me?" I said, "Ma'am, what's wrong?" "I took that stuff before I left your office. As I drove home, I started feeling better. By the time I got home, my depression was gone." So what did I give her? What helped to determine that she was, you know, depressed, that she was out of her mind, that she was
right.
emotional, that chemical? What else do we know about what causes the way we think?
Right. Well, there's some several things that you literally mentioned that I want to point out. We literally consider the high potency B complex stress vitamins. So if somebody is under stress, one of the recommendations is to give them high potency vitamin B complex. Now we have to be careful because, you know, if they get too much, then you start running into some of the neurological issues. But B complex is for stress. It's a vitamin that helps to decrease the stress in our bodies. And part of that is a chemical process. And I'm not going to go into all that. The other thing is when you give her L-tryptophan is converted into the body into serotonin. Serotonin is what we call the happy hormone. it is also the hormone that we look at, I mean, the neurotransmitter that we look at that causes what we consider to be a downregulation of the receptors in the brain. And what we've seen is when serotonin is low, there is an upregulation of some of the receptors in the brain, the serotonin receptors, which causes our mood to go down. When serotonin is high, we see a downregulation of the receptors, and then we see that the mood is elevated. Serotonin is needed for stress. Serotonin is also needed to elevate our mood. We can have people who are extremely successful, but that stress, that success causes a lot of stress, which will deplete their serotonin. And when they have a depleted level of serotonin, the theory is that they will also have a depressed mood. So we put a lot of money right now into the serotonin. So just to let you know how much money that all the neuroscience labs have put into serotonin, when we first came out with Prozac, we had all kinds of stuff about Prozac, not wanting to use it, not being a drug that was safe. And Prozac was the first medication that was a $2 billion a year drug. That's how much. And so then that transpired. Think about this, $2 billion a year. The patent on it was up to 20 years. Prozac was a blockbuster for Eli Lilly. When that happened, everybody started studying the dynamics of serotonin in the brain. And so now we have antidepressants all over the place. You can't swing a dead cat by the tail without hitting an antidepressant, because we now know that serotonin plays a major role in depression. You mentioned dopamine also. Dopamine, yes, dopamine has a part to play. It does a lot more of the reward so that you can create habits. So dopamine does have a part to play, but the major part is serotonin also, okay. And norepinephrine. We found out norepinephrine also has a major part to play. So they've started combining medications that would increase norepinephrine and serotonin.
Outstanding, outstanding. So when we think of mental health, and I don't know if that's the term that people would want to hear, but that's, I'm trying to get the point across. When we deal with health of the mind,
all right,
how common are disorders of the mind?
Okay, that brings me to what we call the etiology, the causes of mental illness. Now, we have three models. The first model is the neurotransmitter or the chemical imbalance. We talked about that. That's what serotonin and dopamine. The second model is a genetic component. We do not know exactly what allele this process of depression is expressed on, but we do know that if a first line relative, like a woman and her mother had depression, she is twice as likely to have depression than, you know, another person. So there's a genetic component to that. The third is what mostly gets people. It's called the psychosocial model. That is the component that says what happens in your life has an effect on your mood. For instance, you talk about cancer patients. Most people go through life thinking that they'll never be sick or that they shouldn't be sick. And as soon as they get sick, they don't put it as an issue of this is life. They start saying, God, why me? And how come? So they go through this whole process of having a negative outlook. That negative outlook causes increased levels of stress, and the stress may actually contribute to the lowering of the serotonin. But the psychosocial model is very important because it states things that happen in your life have an impact on your mood. So we try to get people to understand that if your finances are bad, you're going to have to make some decisions about your finances. Just don't let them ride. If your marriage is bad, you're going to have to make some decisions about your marriage, and that you have to do something about it. You just can't let things sit, because when you let them sit, the negative impact on the neurotransmitters starts affecting not only how you think, how you interact with others, how you view the world, how you eat, how you sleep, your sex drive. All of that is impacted by the neurotransmitter serotonin, which is impacted by your psychosocial factors.
Oh, so I've talked about anxiety, stress. How do we classify that as far as mental health is concerned?
You know, okay.
We hear about depression, we hear about schizophrenia, you know, but how do we deal with this stress thing?
The stress thing is very interesting, because stress will go across all disciplines. So stress usually is associated with anxiety. And there are people that have a natural response, which we call that the etiology is unknown, which is the causational factor is unknown. Sometimes we believe that the stress and anxiety is the body giving a false signal, the brain giving a false signal to the body about the, how do I say this without speaking doctor speak, of the fight or flight response that people will have. And so what they'll do is, when they start thinking of something, they start having palpitations, rapid heartbeat, blood pressure goes up, eyes dilate, respiration starts getting deep, vasoconstriction, and all of a sudden they have this secondary response to the anxiety. And that causes significant problems, because if that persists, that's where we get, not only do we get hypertension, but we also get hypertensive crisis. Not only do we get increased levels of cortisol, but then we have a difficulty with our, because cortisol will affect your immunity, then it will affect your carbohydrate processing, so we get truncal obesity. Then it affects the exchange between sodium and potassium. And so all of a sudden, just from the anxiety, and anxiety is, I want your listeners to understand that anxiety can be managed in most of the people by how we think or what we think. It's just not, you know, you get somebody that has a thought that says, oh, you know, if I step outside my door, you know, something bad may happen. And then we ask them, well, how many times have you stepped outside your door? And they say, like, millions of times I've stepped outside my door. And then we try to get them to carry that process into your mind.
How many times did something bad happen?
Correct. So that you take the negative thought process and change it so that you have a healthier outlook at different aspects. But the mind is very interesting, because you can think something and it becomes real. Just a little story. There was a gentleman that they had. This was one of the ways that the psychologists actually were looking at the power of the mind. There was a gentleman, he worked in a factory, but his job was to work on the trailers, the cooling trailers outside. So one day he was out there, and he always believed that if he ever got locked in the trailer, he would die of exposure. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened to be that this guy got locked into a trailer. The next morning, they found him dead, and the temperature was 63 degrees. Mm-hmm. He died of hypothermia, but it wasn't
because he wasn't cold.
No. But that's how powerful, when we get wrong ideas and things, that's how powerful it affects us.
So. When I tell my patients, when I discuss stress with my patients, one of the things that I tell them, and this is Dr. Watkins talking, but I believe that stress comes from within, not from without. That okay. Stress is not problem, but stress is our response to the problem. Am I sort of on track with that?
Yes, you are sort of on track, more than sort of on track, because that's why we talk about, when we talk about mental health, we talk about how people respond to circumstances. Now, circumstances are going to come. If they haven't come, all you have to do is keep living and they will come. But your response to the circumstance determines a lot of the outcome. For instance, if you have someone that is actually, as you may say, they're low on money, because that can be, you know, a lot of people, they're low on money, and their response to being low on money is to worry, then their internal level of stress is going to increase compared to somebody whose response to having low money is trying to figure out a way to raise their income. Mm-hmm. You see the difference, but worry causes me internally to change, whereas finding a solution to my problem causes me externally to change.
And so in order for them to realize that, you know, I'm not trying to say that the problem doesn't exist. I say, there's a problem, and you may have to, you know, quit your job, you know, mm-hmm. leave your husband, yeah. whatever. But
right.
that is not your stress. You know, if your husband is not putting his hands on you, he can't stress you. You know, your response to your husband is the stress, you know, and the big question is, though, how do you get people to change their response? Or more importantly, why is it that one person will respond, as you mentioned, to low finance by figuring out a way to make it, or praying, God, take care of the problem, whereas the other person right. respond, you know, oh Lord, I'm you know, my children is gonna die of hunger, you know.
Right, right.
You know, 300 pounds.
Right, that's true. Now, it's interesting that you say that, because that's literally multifactorial. And the reason why I say that's multifactorial, because not only is it an issue of what type of environment that you grew up in, an issue of what your parents or your support system said to you, an issue of how you view yourself, an issue of exposure to answers and solutions, but then it also comes down to an issue of if you, and this is not, we're not trying to be Christians, but we are, I am a Christian psychiatrist. When we believe in a power outside of ourselves, it gives us the ability to lay stuff down, to put it down and not feel that we're doing this thing by ourselves. That is the advantage that Christians have, is that we believe that there is a creator that cares about us. And when we have difficulty, we can go and say, hey, listen, I'm struggling with this. I have no answer for it. What can be done? Help me. So when I go through and I say all the multifactorial, all those processes, you know, if a kid grows up and his stimulation is very minimal and he sees that his father gets a hustle to feed the family, you know what he's going to do when he's got his, that's right, he's going to find a hustle. But if you have somebody that has captive negativism, then all they're going to do is be like Eeyore on Winnie the Pooh, and it woe is me. And you know, I don't want it to sound, you know, like some groups that say, oh no, you just picked yourself up by your bootstraps. Want you to understand that it's multifactorial, and how they got to the point where they can't visualize or think through a process or come up with a solution. And that's where the primary care comes in.
You know, just yesterday, I was talking to a patient and I was talking about Frank. You know, I said, one of the people I'll have you talk to is one of my patients and friend named Frank. I said, yeah, works with me in my radio program. I said, Frank was diagnosed with stage 4 liver cancer back in 2013. He'd gone to Johns Hopkins, he went to Sibley, he went to Georgetown, he went to Washington Hospital Center. And at best they gave him a 6% chance to live 6 months. This is in 2015. And he says that he went home and depressed, prepared to die. And then he said he prayed, and after he prayed, he developed a sense of hope, right?
Right.
Once he developed a sense of hope, then he went and started reading and read where if he made certain changes in his lifestyle, you know, including juicing and different things, that just perhaps he could decrease or eliminate the cancer. And of course, it's now gone. But
okay.
The process started with hope. If he didn't have that sense of hope,
correct,
that emotion, he would have never done the other things. So that gets back to my question. What caused him to be able to have that sense? So maybe you explain it. Maybe the way he grew up, his mom used to tell him he could do anything. You know,
correct.
I know I told, and I guess my wife did too, our children, you can do anything. You know, there's no limitations. And they were crazy enough to believe me that there's no limitation on what they do. And some of them, even though I grew up in a very impoverished environment, never knew my daddy and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I could do anything.
Correct. You know?
And so is it environment or what is it? Because you can have two children in the same environment. One is very optimistic and the other is, you know, so I don't know.
Right. And that's we constantly go through the nature versus nurture. And you're right. You can have two children that grow up in the same environment, kind of get the same parental treatment, and yet they come out so different. That's why multifactorial genetics also play a role in that. However, I'm gonna talk about that four-letter word that you just gave, and hope. Hope is the ability for us to step outside of ourselves.
Mm.
Hope gives us the strength to think that there is something different. Hope says to us that I don't have all the answers, and yet there's an answer out there.
Mm.
When you're able to transition to hope, and this is what I want your readers to understand. It doesn't matter how bad your circumstance is. It really doesn't matter how bad your circumstance is. Once you're able to put hope into play, the body then responds, your mind then responds, and it starts looking for ways, consciously or subconsciously, mm-hmm. for you to realize this process that you started. Now, some people may say it's the Holy Spirit. Some people may say it's the indomitable spirit of mankind. Whatever you want to call it, that process is initiated by you having a different thought. That thought is, there's something else out there. I have hope. Frank, when you mentioned the thing about Frank, I knew that when Frank got off his knees, one of the things that he was going to do is he was going to start researching. He was going to start looking. He's going to start reading. Because hope doesn't just leave us with the obvious. Hope gives us the stuff behind the obvious.
Mm.
And then, but how do you do that? You have to be able to say, listen, I got a sixth grade education. I'm going to read, or I'm going to go on YouTube. I'm going to put it in that menu bar that says liver cancer, fourth stage, better health, clean eating. What doctor, right? That's what hope allows us to do, for us to look outside of ourselves. And just, we don't have to be limited by only the ideas that we have or the ideas that healthcare professionals have.
So we've talked about a lot of things, and it's been very, very enlightening for me, as I'm sure for our listening audience too. Because this is pre-recorded, we can't get calls, and I know a lot of people with questions would love to be calling in. So what I want to know is we talked about anxiety, we talked about depression, we talked about stress. What causes this switch from the sort of the mild issues to the major depression, schizophrenia,
right,
etc., major phobias? You can have minor phobias, then you have major phobias that really paralyzes people. They can't do anything because of the
right.
What is it that seems to causes one to move into that area?
Well, part of that is your physical makeup. For instance, we know that if you have a tremendous stressor, it can cause some genes in your body to be expressed that other people will not be able to express. So that's one model, is like, for instance, OCD. OCD, we don't know why it happens. Obsessive compulsive disorder, we don't know why it happens, but it usually happens after something significant event in somebody's life. Bipolar disorder, we don't know why it happens. We do know that if your father or mother or relative in your family had it, it runs in family lines. But why do some people have it and some people don't within the same family? But usually we can find a point where something major has happened and the body's way of responding to it is the expression of this gene, whether it's, you know, a terrible loss in the family or whether it's a near-death experience. What we do know, and we kind of backed into this thing, what we do know is, like, for instance, schizophrenia. Schizophrenia, the prevalence of schizophrenia in the world has not changed. It's always been at 1% of the population. So we don't know exactly why it stays at 1%. Major depression, anxiety, has a lot of outside factors. You know, I continue to say, it's interesting, if I can't pay my bills, the response of others to me not paying my bills is to charge me more money. right? And so you're sitting here and you're thinking, okay, so that's not to say that is not what their model is. I'm just saying, but it puts significant amount of stress. Some people, let's just face it, some people, their personalities and their characters are of such nature that they are not going to push themselves or stress themselves out, or they may even game the system. Understand that. We do not exactly know why these things are expressed, but we do know that they are. I'm going to give you an answer that people may not like. I say because the state of the human body is one of deterioration, that's why we get these things like cancer, diabetes, which has external factors, but those are deteriorating, hypertension, major depression, cardiovascular disease, strokes. You know, so there's a process of deterioration. Remember, when we're born, getting older is aging, is the process of dying. That's what aging is. It's the process of dying. So our bodies change from today till tomorrow, whether it's environmental factors like what the air is like, what our water is like, what our nutritional statuses are like, what fruits and vegetables, what our home life is like, what our happiness meter says. All these are contributing factors that may at any time cause expression of genes that we don't even know that they're there. And now, some people.
It's interesting. I remember, you know, in med school, we took psychiatry every year.
Yes.
At least the first 3 years. We took psychiatry. And I remember they said they were looking at the genetics, and they looked at children who were identical twins who were separated at birth. All right.
Right.
All
right. So yes.
They didn't grow up in the same environment. Some cases, not even the same country, didn't know each other, you know, boom. But when they tracked them, the same rate of schizophrenia developed in
yes.
Yes. So it's almost like I can't help myself, or how would you deal with that?
I'll deal with it like this. There are some people that will have essential hypertension no matter what you do. That's just it. Your body makeup is one that will be a proponent of certain disorders and diseases. Same thing that may happen with mental illness. Mental illness, in a lot of circumstances, is a biological entity. It's a process that happens to us physically. And I would say that when you have, first of all, is to accept the fact that you may have something going on. If you don't accept the fact that you may have something going on, you never even know what you're fighting. It's like the first way to beat a problem is to know what the problem is.
That's right.
Yeah, so, you know, that's 50% of the battle. So once you know what the problem is, or you have an idea or suspect, you know, there are people that are experts in this process. You have to be careful who you go to, because there's some nuts out there too. But there are people that are experts that their whole purpose is to help people that are going through difficulty. In fact, Ted or Dr. Watkins, just as you say, change your diet and you'll be able to avoid greater complications of diabetes, is the same thing that we say. Change your mind process so that you can avoid greater complications of your psychosocial pressures.
And I say, in addition to changing your mind, change your diet, and it will impact your mind.
Absolutely, absolutely. There, that old statement, and I don't know if the young people say this anymore, but we say, you are what you eat. So if you put junk in, guess what you're going to get? And we now know that processed sugar and the amount of processed sugar that the world has is detrimental to us. The amount of stress is detrimental to us. The amount of fat and the amount of you know, high cholesterol and triglyceride food, we know that's detrimental to us. Even though it's pushed on us, because we got grocery stores on every corner that have chips and soda and cookies and everything. And that in itself, one day we'll talk about nutrition and mental health.
But yeah, we're going to talk about the gut mind, you know.
Yes.
Bring you back, yes. And talk about this. So before Brother Frank is letting us know we don't have a lot of time left, but before we go, I want to make sure that if people want to get, I know you're not soliciting patients, you've got probably more than you can handle now. But if someone wanted to get in touch with you, what would be the best way of doing so?
The best way, I have three offices in the Maryland area. So one in Tacoma Park, one in Glen Burnie, and one office over on the Eastern Shore. Eastern Shore, usually we do telepsych medicine, because that has been a way for access, for people to access, that has been second to none. So the number for the office, you can call one number and get all three offices. And right, that number is 301-891-2077.
Say that again.
And just 301-891-2077. And all you have to do is say, listen, I heard him on Dr. Watkins' radio show, and we will try to get you in as soon as possible. Now, I want to tell you that I don't consider myself, even though I have awards and I've been voted top executive for the Washington, D.C. area, and I've been top doc several times for psychiatry for the Virginia, D.C., and Maryland area, I don't consider myself to be the end all to be all. I just consider myself that it's been blessed and God has given me some knowledge. But here's what I will tell you is that if they call, one of our, the whole mission of our operation is never to turn anybody away, help those in need, and try to get you in within 2 weeks. We do that better than anybody else. That's what our goal is, to do that better than anybody else. So as long as you sit in the chair, we will do our best to help. But you have to be in the chair.
You got to be in the chair. You know, and so that's so important. And people have to be willing to reach out.
Yes.
All right. And get help, you know, because to just sit back and recognize that there's a problem. I mean, it's one thing if you don't know you have a problem.
But yes.
Recognize you have a problem. And not do anything about it, it's terrible. What you know, I'm very funny about you know, the way I choose doctors that I go to, doctors that mm-hmm. I recommend patients to, you know. And so, you know, you gotta be smart.
Yeah.
you gotta know your stuff. But more than that, you have to be someone who treats patients like human beings, and that's why I have to be very honest. I said, if I have a patient that needs to see a psychiatrist, I call you, because I have found over the years that that's what you do. And so I'm so proud to say that you are not only an outstanding psychiatrist, you are a good person too, and you're smart because you have working with you a very competent wife.
Yes.
Who we're going to get on at another time to share some of the expertise that she has, you know, because she's a psychologist.
Yeah, she's a therapist, family and marriage therapist.
Okay.
And we've been married not as long as you, but we've held it together for 34 years.
And you've done an excellent job. You have a son. One son is what? He's a
child psychiatrist.
Child psychiatrist, you know.
And the other is business and helps us run the organization.
All right. So I mean, it's just it's really outstanding what you all have done, and God has blessed you. I believe because of the kind of people that you are. Now, we just have a couple of minutes left.
Okay.
This broadcast has been pre-recorded. There will be no callers.
Would you want to leave with our audience try to deal with the very stress? I mean, this is a stressful environment. I mean,
yes.
We can all be crazy.
Yep. You know,
if we didn't have mechanisms to deal with it, and like you, prayer and singing and you know,
yep.
I used to sing all the time. All of my family members are very good singers, but I'm
more
than anybody else. And one day my mama said, "Son, you just keep on singing. When you get to heaven, God gonna give you a voice." But it
didn't
matter the quality. It was. It helped me to feel better when I would sing. So what would you say to people as they try to deal with life?
Okay, so I would tell them several things. Number one, turn off your TV, get outside. Sunlight has a way of turning off the pineal gland, which will elevate your mood.
All right.
So if you're stressed out, turn off the TV, get outside. turning off the TV, the things that we're seeing on television and YouTube and FaceTime and everything else, you become what you behold. If you're going to behold something positive, you are going to become positive. You're going to behold something stressful and negative, you will become that. That's how the mind works. The other thing I would suggest is have a form of exercise. You don't have to run a marathon, but you certainly could get out there and walk. And if you can't get out there and walk, you can roll your wheelchair or you can slide along in your walker, but have some form of exercise. The eating, you are what you eat. Clean up your diet. Refine sugars and process. There's one doctor that said, Dr. Watkins, he said, if it has a barcode on it, it's probably not good for you. and I've taken that to heart. I saw him like maybe a month ago. He says, yes, if it has a barcode, it's not probably not healthy for you. So clean up your diet. These are things that you can practically do. Clean up your diet. If you put a little more vegetables, a colorful plate in there. The other thing is, you mentioned it, singing. If you are happy, then the rest of your body will respond to that. Or if you're singing, so that means what you listen to. If you're listening to country music and you're getting your, what they say, you play country music backwards and you get your house back, your wife back, and your dog back, maybe you're listening to the wrong thing. Maybe you ought to listen to something a little bit more positive. And so those are things that practically you can do right now that will help. When all else fails, seek out someone who you can trust that you can talk to. As you process, you talk to them, you process, and your mind will come up with answers. That's what psychotherapy is about.
Outstanding. Want you to just one more time give your contact information out.
Yes, it's Dr. Cephas, Behavior Healthcare of Maryland, and it's 301-891-2077.
We're definitely going to have you back. I mean, there's so many things that we can talk about more, because this is such an important area. But certainly one of the things that we want to talk about is this thing about the gut mind, the impact yes. of the belly on the mind, and we want to get your input. This is Dr. Ted Watkins, my side cook, kick Frank Smith, who was engineering today since we're not on live. So he didn't say too much, but he has a lot to say. And of course, our outstanding guest, Dr. Marcellus Cephas, one of my good friends and colleagues. We want to thank you so much again, Doc. And we'll be back next week with another outstanding program. See you again next week.
Ital, we're ital, and a vegan, we're vegan. I and I eat from the earth and leave the animals to give birth. No deaders, no fur, no feathers. When I tell people I don't eat meat, fish, or dairy, they look at me strangely. They don't realize I eat a wide variety. Listen to Maccabee. Yeah, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me don't eat no fish or no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yam. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me don't eat no fish or no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yam. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. When me not eat no meat, no fish, no cheese, nah, no egg. Nothing with no foot, no eye, no wing, nah, no head. Nothing with no lips, no ears, no toe, nah, no leg. Me prefer fruit and vegetable instead. Me careful and me choosy about what I'm eating. Me medicine, me food is me medicine. When me tell people that me no eat them, they think. They look for me and scratch them chin and start wondering. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish or no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me yam. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan man. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish or no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. You want me eat? No. I eat canola, ackee, sweet potato, yam, banana, and tomato, cabbage, spinach, avocado, chocho, butter, bean, and cocoa, courgette, millet, planting, rice and peas and pumpkin, mango, dates and guava, chickpeas and cassava, Brussels sprouts and cauliflower, onion, fennel and cucumber, plum, pear and papaya, aubergine and saya, lime, lentils and quinoa, homemade bread and homemade flour, watercress and okra, tofu and sweet pepper, couscous and carrot, broccoli and coconut, peaches, apples, apricot, beetroot, jackfruit, sour, sap, pistachio, to choose an almond, walnut, peanut, tassel, pecan, sesame seeds and flour, lemon, orange, pineapple and melon, bulgur, wheat and garlic, hijiki and rocket, pacho and pomegranate, kiwi, corn and turnip, berries, cherries and strawberries, beetroot, grapefruit and celery. You see, they mean unnecessary with the lens. And when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish or no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me damn. When me tell them,
the WPFW Local Station Board is hosting a town hall meeting on Saturday, December 7th at New Bethany Baptist Church, 1300 10th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., from noon to 2:30 p.m. Plenty of off-street parking is available. As this will be our last town hall while at our present location, 1990 K Street Northwest, we hope that you will attend this important meeting to discuss WPFW's relocation plans, as well as other important issues facing the station. Healthy refreshments will be served. We hope to see you there.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Today, Special Counsel Jack Smith filed a motion to dismiss at least two cases against President-elect Donald Trump, namely his effort to overturn the 2020 presidential election that led to the deadly Capitol insurrection and the mishandling of classified documents cases. Smith made the decision because of the Justice Department's long-standing position that it cannot charge a sitting president. Dan Goldman, a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, who led the first impeachment inquiry against Donald Trump, had this to say about the filing to dismiss the charges.
I think it is a shame for justice in this country. It establishes that Donald Trump is above the law. The Supreme Court put him above the law, but now he appears to escape full accountability for what were crimes charged by a grand jury.
Special Counsel Jack Smith and his team plan to resign before Donald Trump takes office in January. Trump previously said he would fire Smith once he retook office. The former CEO of YouTube, Susan Wojcicki, passed away in August of this year at age 56 after a two-year battle with non-small cell lung cancer. This morning, YouTube posted on its blog a letter that was written by Wojcicki in the weeks before her death. In the letter, she wrote that November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month, and that during her ordeal, she learned that lung cancer is the number one cause of cancer death in women and the second most common type of cancer in women. She talked about her experience, saying, and I quote, "At the end of 2022, I was diagnosed with lung cancer. I had almost no symptoms and was running a few miles a day at the time. I had never smoked, so I was totally shocked with this diagnosis," end quote. According to health experts, Susan Wojcicki's situation is not unique because a trend has emerged in the United States where more young and middle-aged women are being diagnosed with lung cancer at higher rates than men. And although cigarette smoking is the number one risk factor for lung cancer, many of those young women being diagnosed have never smoked. It's estimated that about two-thirds of lung cancer cases in people who have never smoked are in women. To your local news, in New York City, Bronx Representative Richie Torres is furious with the administrations of Mayor Eric Adams and Governor Kathy Hochul. As he indicated in a scathing letter, Torres accused those administrations of being, quote, complicit or part of three murders of three innocent people by a serial stabber, Ramon Rivera. Rivera is a 51-year-old homeless man with a long rap sheet. He was released early after serving just 9 months of a 12-month sentence after assaulting a corrections officer. After his release, he mercilessly stabbed three people to death in broad daylight, telling police that he chose his victims because they were distracted and alone. Representative Torres called the City Department of Correction, or DOC, the worst offender for releasing Rivera early, saying, and I quote, The bureaucrats in DOC who authorized the early release of Ramon Rivera should be fired. Those who cannot be entrusted with public safety should no longer be employed by the people of New York, end quote. In the D.C. area, it's been 10 years since the death of D.C.'s mayor for life, Marion Barry. And now there's a new mural in his honor. It was unveiled on Saturday by Mayor Muriel Bowser at the Marion S. Barry Jr. building in Judiciary Square. The mural is split into three sections, each highlighting a different aspect of Barry's career. The first two sections, titled Big Vision and Big Impact, focus on his early years in activism and then his time in office as mayor. But those sections emphasize Marion Barry's support for Black-owned businesses.